Morning, everybody. My name is Matthew. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Wow, what a blessing it is to be here. See all of you. Welcome to the newcomers, the old timers, everybody in between. Life is amazing. You know, at 3 months ago, I was sitting at Starbucks talking to my sponsee, Andy, and I happened to go outside, and I received a phone call from Shane, who's on the committee, this year's committee, and we had met once before, and he said, "Hey, Matt, how you doing?" I said, "I'm doing pretty well tonight, man. I'm blessed. And he said, "Well, I just wanted to talk to you briefly. A friend of ours, Brett, who's in the program." I said, "Oh, yeah." He says, "Well, you know, we're trying to find an H&I speaker this year, and he suggested you." I said, "Wow, really?" I said, "What do I have to do?" And he says, "You have to speak." I said, "I could do that." And, you know, when I was asked to speak, it was not about me. It was not about ego. It was not about pride. It wasn't like, "Oh, cool, I get to share it with everybody that I'm the speaker. I'm the guy." You know, God has humbled this man big time. And it is a blessing to be able to be here at this conference, to be a part of AA, to be a part of Rafters, which is my home group, and to know so many of you. H&I, you know, H&I is a wonderful, wonderful part of AA. Hospitals and institutions, you know, allows us to bring Alcoholics Anonymous, to bring our experience, strength, and hope to those who necessarily can't come to a meeting, you know. And I have gone to various drug facilities around the Santa Clarita Valley and a couple in the San Fernando Valley. I'm not allowed to go into prisons or jails as I'm on parole even now. Before I get into how I was introduced to H&I and the path that I've been walking over these last few years, I wanted to qualify and give you a little bit of my history. And given the fact that I learned this morning I'm speaking for an hour, I figure it's a good idea. From the age of zero to 10, I was good. You know, life was good. I mean, I was generally a happy kid. And around the age of 10 or 11, I started getting depressed. And I didn't know that it was depression. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I just knew that I was uncomfortable, that something was wrong inside of me. And I couldn't shake it. And as a kid, one of the things I turned to was sugar, you know. At the age of 11, I was taken to a doctor, a specialist, a psychologist and psychiatrist, who diagnosed me with sugar blue syndrome. It's a real disease. And sugar blue syndrome is simply when kids take sugar, they usually get hyper. And if you suffer from sugar blue syndrome, you go into an immediate depression if you have an overload of sugar. And so when I was depressed, I would turn to sugar. And the sugar would take me into a further depression. And I would eat more sugar. And it was a horrible spiraling effect. And I didn't know what that was. I didn't even know how to analyze it or understand what it was. And so I certainly couldn't share that with anybody. So I felt I was different. I always felt I was different, you know. I didn't feel like I was unique until years later, you know. But when I was young, I felt different. And you know, my parents, I grew up with my parents and two siblings, and my parents have always been social drinkers, you know. And they've always had a wine cabinet filled with different types of alcohol. And I always saw them invite friends over, family over, and have just beer or wine or scotch or brandy or whatever. And it just looked so cool. It just looked so relaxed. I wanted to be different. I wanted to be an adult. I just didn't want to be myself, you know. And so one day they were gone, and I went into the wine cabinet, and I don't even remember what I had. But I had a little bit of I think it was wine. And I hated the taste of alcohol. I've always hated the taste of alcohol. But I remember the feeling I got. The feeling, I just fell in love. You know, I got this warmth over me. This feeling like, wow, the magical potion, you know? And then I snapped out of it as my parents drove up in the driveway, and I quickly put the bottle back in, and I knew I was going to do that again. And the next opportunity really arose when I went to my friend's bar mitzvah, and there was a big table with champagne, and I, as soon as I got there, I was just, you know, my full attention was, how was I going to get this bottle? Not a glass, but a bottle. And I did. Within 20 minutes, I had a whole bottle to myself. I snuck off, didn't share it with my friend or anything, and I ended up drinking the whole thing, or damn near close, you know. And within an hour, I was throwing up on myself, doing the spins, and my parents had run over, and everybody was running over, and I had throw up all over me, and drunk at the age of 12. And I spent that night at my friend's house. My parents let me spend the night at his house, throwing up in the toilet, and praying to God that I would never do this again. Just get me through the night. And I did. I got through the night, barely. And that seemed to me be my MO over the next 6 years. You know, I would find a way to get drunk, get high, throw up, ask God, never do it again. He got me through it. And what alcohol did for me, besides introduced me to all kinds of toilets, was it gave me a great sense of courage to be around people I normally wouldn't. Women, for example, you know. I mean, I could go up without alcohol and say hi, and that was about it. I didn't know what else to say, you know. And it also allowed me to feel a part of, you know. And it definitely got me out of the sense of the creepy, crawly, uncomfortable in my own skin type of feeling, you know? And it worked for a couple years. And then it got to the point where it didn't work as well. And I started drinking more and experimenting more and doing different things, trying to get that feeling back. And then I started getting in a little bit of trouble, and the depression started coming back, and the lack of self-worth was there again, alive and well. And not only was I suffering from depression and a poor self-image and a lack of direction in life, but now I was an alcoholic, a full-blown alcoholic drug addict. And started getting into a little bit of trouble. And like Rick was sharing, I always was able to kind of get out of it with a little slap on the wrist, you know? Until one night, when I was 18, I was involved in a murder. And it was a domestic situation that turned horribly bad. And it happened like that, just like my story. It went from a person, a kid, who had a little bit of trouble, who was trying to find the answers in life, to somebody doing life, you know. And I received a life sentence in prison. And it was there when I first got in trouble that I was behind the iron gates in the cell. And I was at this door, I was standing at the door my first couple nights, yearning for that alcohol. Yearning for that drug, wanting to escape, wanting to get away more than ever. And I couldn't. Thank God. For the first time in a long time, I had to deal with myself and life and what I had just done with a sober, or at least not so messed up head. You know, I didn't have alcohol to turn to. I didn't have drugs to turn to. I didn't have family or anybody. See, for the last year I was out there in freedom, I ran away from my family, I ran away from my loved ones, I ran away from school, I ran away from myself, I ran away from life. And now I couldn't get any of those things, though I wanted them so badly. 3 months into my incarceration, I wanted to kill myself. You know, and I had a blade in my hand and I fell to my knees for the first time. I said the real prayer. You know, I didn't say, God, get me out of this. I'll never do it again. But I did, you know. But I said it with tears and with feeling. And I think what I said was, God, help or I'm going to die. You know. And I fell asleep that night. Woke up the next morning. I couldn't find the blade anywhere. And I knew I didn't want to kill myself. But I was still freaking miserable. Still lost. Still scared. And didn't know what I was going to do. Didn't know how much time I was going to end up doing. But it was that night when the first miracle happened. It's when there was a little light that entered into my heart and my life and my spirit. It was the first time my spirit woke up, you know. You know, I always thought that God had abandoned me. I grew up in a religious home. My mom was a minister for many years. She just retired a year and a half ago. So I always knew about God, and I always knew about, you know, Jesus and all that, you know. But I didn't understand it. It was just sort of this thing that we went to every Sunday and prayed and didn't have a relationship, didn't have an understanding. And on that night, it was the first time I was introduced to my higher power. And I realized, not that night, but I realized over the years that it was I who abandoned God. You know, and it was God who's always been with me. And he's proven that so many times over my life. Shortly thereafter, I was introduced to a thing called AA. And all I heard was, you want to get out of your cell? Yeah. AA, sure, I'll go. You know? Of course I knew what AA was, but I've never been to AA. You know, never even thought about AA when I was out. When I was doing my thing. And I went into this chow hall. And there were probably 50 or so people. And I sat in the very back behind the biggest guys. You know, and the only thing I said for a year of going to AA was, hi, my name's Matthew and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. I thought, this is easy. This is cool. You know, I'm not drinking. I'm going to AA. I'm doing the right thing. Life's good. And I also became a fundamentalist Christian. Told everybody they're going to hell if they don't change their way, like me, because I changed my way completely. And I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable because I had thoughts of lust. I'm going to hell. I had thoughts of escaping. I'm going to hell. I'm going to hell. It didn't matter. I'm going to hell. This God was damning, you know. And I finally asked my mom, again a minister, and I said, Mom, I don't understand this thing with God. How am I not going to be damned? For the first time, I really started dealing with taking another life and causing so much more wreckage than just that, you know. For I had destroyed the trust of a family, a community, you know, and really the world, because I believe in the ripple effect. My good friend Lee wrote a poem about that, you know. And I was walking across the prison yard one day, and this paper blew and hit me right in the chest. And it was a poem that you had written. It was about the ripple effect, you know. So I continued to go into AA, you know, anyway. At first I went just to get out of the cell, see a couple guys, do my thing. But I started hearing things, you know. In the beginning it was, of course, wah, 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 wah. Couldn't hear, couldn't understand. Didn't know what other people were doing there or what they were saying. I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I was an alcoholic and that I had a problem, you know. And before I was introduced to the steps of AA, see, I didn't open the book. I did not even read the book for the first year. Didn't even have one, you know. And when I started opening the book and reading the doctor's opinion, more about alcoholism, there's a solution. We agnostics, the big book. When I started reading it, I started feeling for the first time that I wasn't alone. That there were others out there that actually understood what I was going through, what I was feeling, who I was, you know. And I realized, looking at the first three steps, that God had helped me to work the three steps before I even knew they existed. I'd been going to AA for about 4 years inside when I was first introduced to H&I. And because of where I was, I don't think I was ready to accept or see or realize just how important H&I is. You know, all I knew is that they got to come in, share a little bit, and they got to go home. You know? La-di-da. You know? You don't know what life is about. You don't know what suffering's about. See, I was still sick. I was still in my head. It was all about Matthew. You know? And it wasn't until I was in Tehachapi State Prison, 1994. I had been incarcerated for about 9 years. I had been sober for about 9 years. That I was introduced to H&I. Really introduced to H&I by a little group called Rafters. And I had met this woman who's a big part of Rafters today, Kathy. And boy, how can you not hear Kathy? Wow, she came in, it was just like, she's like, and I love drums. I was like, all right. But you know what was awesome about H&I? Is these people came in and they weren't superior to us because we were in blue. You know? They were one of us and we were one of them. And it was the first time I realized that. And they began to share their experience, strength, and hope in a way that I'd never heard before. And I think that's what matters, is that we never know. When we go on H&I panels, we never know who's going to hear our message. And I often hear from my sponsor, Mike, that it's not my responsibility. It's only my responsibility what I say. It's not my responsibility what you hear. You know? And that's so true. And I started getting involved and asking questions. And what was amazing is God put me in a place, Tehachapi State Prison, at the right time for me. And what I mean by that is Tehachapi State Prison was the only institution that I know of that allowed inmates to be on an H&I panel, a committee, that met with outside H&I to set up conferences inside prison, to set up speakers, parties, all that stuff, you know? And we had people from Bakersfield, Lancaster, San Fernando Valley, and of course Santa Clarita come up and come up often. They didn't just come up once, say their thing, and forget about us. They came again and again and again. And I began realizing to myself, I said, man, when these people walked out, when they got to go home, I said, man, I hope I get to do that one day. And I started praying, God, you know, I don't know if I'm ever going home, but if I do, prepare me so when I do go home, that I can do what they're doing. I want to be able to carry my experience, strength, and hope to others and save others. And I also want to be able to walk out. You know? Recovery has been slow for me. It's progressive, just like our disease. I have a huge, brilliant light. I have a huge, brilliant spirit that shines within me today. And a huge part of that is H&I. See, where society gave up on a lot of us that were inside the walls, AA never did. H&I never did. All of you never did. Every single meeting I have been to, whether it's inside or out, San Fernando Valley, Santa Clarita, Santa Monica, Doesn't matter. We're all alcoholics. We're all trying to help each other with this disease. I've never been asked to leave a meeting because of my past, but I've always received hugs. I've always received love. I've always received help and hope. And to me, that's what H&I is about. H&I is more than just bringing a meeting to somebody that can't get to a meeting. H&I is letting people that are struggling, that are lost, that are hopeless, we're letting them know that we've been there. We know. And we're here for you always. And so I spent 24 years, 10 days in prison. I went in when I was 18 years old, and I got out 3 years ago when I was 42. And what gifts I received from AA, from sobriety, and from my God, amazing doesn't even describe it. To do 24 years, 10 days in prison, and never knowing I was coming home, to go from somebody that had no hope, no light in their heart, no direction, to go from somebody that participated in the murder of another human being, to where I stand today speaking to all of you, to having friends, to having hope and love, trust, sobriety. I mean, I had a lot of time to fantasize about what I wanted in life. And what I have today, I never even dreamt of. You know? So I walked out on October 26, 2009. It was on a Monday. And I remember getting home, and I actually kissed my driveway. Yeah. Kissed my driveway. And my family was there waiting for me. I also have to share something with you that's a miracle, and that is my father, partly out of guilt and partly just to keep me informed, wrote me a letter every single day for 24 years and 10 days, over 8,000 letters. And at the very end of his letters, he always said, "Keep the faith and be free." When I first read that, I thought, this guy is insane. He has no freaking clue where I am, what I'm going through. Keep the faith and be free. I felt like writing him, "Dad, do you even know where I am?" God. That was where I was. I came to cherish those words. I came to live by those words. Today, I do have great faith, and I'm incredibly free. And that happened all before I was released. So the very next day, October 27th, 2009, I walked into Rafters. My cousin Alex had been going there for years, and I heard about Rafters from him, Kathy, and a few others. And I always dreamt about having the chance to share a meeting with Alex and walk in sobriety together. And today we get to do that. Within 2 weeks, I met a man named Brett. Brett A. He was an H&I panel leader. And he asked me if I would like to go to an H&I meeting. I said, "Hell yes." And you got to understand, for the first 3 months I was out, I could not stop smiling. My jaw was so sore. And I used to hug people. I used to hug. I still do. But I'd go up to meetings and I'd be hugging. "I don't even know you guys. I'm hugging you." And some people even told me later, they said, "Who the hell is this guy?" "I'm mad and I'm an alcoholic. I just did 24 years and life's great." What? But you know what? They know it's genuine. Today, you guys know it's genuine. And I got to go to my first H&I panel up at Action. Wow. Huh? If you've ever gone on an H&I panel. Because that first night when I shared, God was speaking through me. You know? There were probably 10 or 11 young people. And the greatest gift I received that night was when one of them came up to me crying and saying, "Thank you for coming here and sharing your story, man." Because my story is a hard one. It's a hard one to share. It's one that fills me with a lot of shame, you know. But I also know that God uses my story and me to help others, to let all of you know that no matter how far down the path you guys have gone and fallen, there's hope. There's hope in these rooms. There's hope in this book. There's hope in this program. And there's hope in all of us, you know. And when that person came up to me and was crying, I began to cry. You know, I said, "No, thank you." And then I got in my car and I left. Yeah. What a feeling. To be able to go in and not have to stay. I got to leave. And that's what sobriety is. You know? Since that time, I've continued to be involved in H&I in many, many ways. You know? I've gone to action, both the young side and the older side. I've gone to Warm Springs when it used to be open, up in the hills on Castaic. And I used to share with these people, you know, I said, "You guys are fortunate." And some of them were like, "What?" And then they heard my story. I wish I had gotten to go to Action or Warm Springs or Acton or any other place. But then I thought about it, I prayed about it, and I'm exactly where I was supposed to be. Because maybe if I had gone there and not gone to prison, it wouldn't have meant nothing to me. I would have used, abused, drank, and died. And I wouldn't have been able to have sponsees like I do today. I wouldn't be able to have a sponsor like I do today. I wouldn't be able to give hugs to you today. And I certainly wouldn't be here today. And I'm glad I'm here today. You know, H&I is amazing for a lot of reasons, because it never ends, and it never will. There's always going to be people that we need to reach out to bring this program to bring the steps to, you know. And I've learned a lot of things through H&I, and one of the things I've learned in H&I is action. You know, doesn't matter how badly you want it, if you don't get off your derriere, ain't going to happen. And one of the things I love doing at H&I panels, and I can't do this a lot, I'll break out a $5 bill or a $10 bill or some ones or whatever, but I break out the moolah. And I said, "Who wants this?" Everybody's like, "Ah." But there's the one or two guys that come running up. And I give it to them. "It's yours." I see. It doesn't matter how bad you want that money. You have to do what these gentlemen just did. Get off your ass. And that's what sobriety is about. You know? It's about action. It's about getting involved. It's about being of service. It's not about you. It's certainly not about me. You know? And that took a long time to learn. I often joke with my sponsor and some friends. I said, you know, they asked me to be the H&I speaker this year, and I have no idea what that means. What the hell is H&I? Of course, joking. You know, and I think back about all the H&I panels I've been on. I've been on H&I panels where people don't come up to me at all. You know, but that's okay. Maybe I planted a seed. Just maybe. You know? Maybe I needed to be there to hear something that the other guys I went with, you know. And I've gone on panels with women too. It's awesome. And I'll tell you, for 24 years, stag meetings. Got tired of the stag meetings. I love you women. I love the fact that you're a part of this. You know? See, we're no different. Women or men. As different as we are, we're no different when it comes to this disease, when it comes to the fellowship, when it comes to this program and being of service, you know? I've had women come up to me thanking me. I've had men come up to me thanking me, you know? I've built beautiful relationships with people. People have come out from these action programs and acting programs and come to Rafters and said, "Man, I remember you." I'm like, "From where?" And they tell me. I said, "Man, it's good to see you. It's good to see you. What are you going to do now?" You know. You know what's amazing is, and it was a little strange for me at first, but when I started going to H&I panels, all kinds of people would come up. I mean, literally 10, 20 people. "Matt, can I get your number? Can I get your number? Can I call?" Every single time I gave it to him, didn't matter. I said, "Definitely, call." And I remember the first time that happened, I was really excited. And Brett, you know, told me, he says, "They're not going to call." "No, no, no, you don't understand. They wanted my number, man. And they're going to call." Nobody freaking called. He says, "Man, very few people do. Very few people do. But don't ever stop giving it. Because there's going to be that one or two that are ready. You know? And we have to be ready." H&I is also a gift for me. In that, without H&I, I wouldn't be able to keep what I have. And I have a lot. Tuesday, this past week, I celebrated 27 years. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. And I don't sit on my laurels. Mm-mm. I don't want to ever go back. I hear people all the time, 5 years, 20 years, and they go out and drink again. I can't imagine that. I don't want to imagine that. I have 4 sponsees today. Beautiful lights in my life, man. Pain in the asses. I have a sponsor. You know, Mike's been the only sponsor I've had. I love you. Yeah. I asked him to be my sponsor right after my 25th birthday. I never had a sponsor. Prison, we don't have sponsors. We get locked down for 6 months. You don't get to talk to your sponsor. You know? Come out after 6 months, everybody's transferred, gone, died, paroled. You know? So what we did was relied on the group. I came out here, and that's what I did. I relied on all of you. And somebody finally pulled my covers and said, "Man, get a freaking sponsor. You know, work the program." And I did, man. It's been an amazing journey, you know. When I was inside, I got to work the steps. And I got to help others work the steps. But I got to experience working the steps with Mike not too long ago in a way that I'd never been through the steps before, you know. And he showed me how to take others through the steps. And I've taken quite a few people through the steps. And every time, man, it's like I get more out of it than anybody. You know? My message today is action, though. See, it's easy just to go to a meeting, say hi, go back home. A few days, start feeling shitty, go to a meeting,
say hi. I'm an alcoholic. Go home. Don't you know I'm busy? Don't you know I have to work? And I got kids. It's not about you. It really isn't. And that's another gift I received in this program. Because for so long I thought it was about me. And I was miserable. And when I realized it's about you, from my perspective, and not me, that's when I started to grow. That's when I started to see the light. That's when I started to receive blessings that I never thought I would receive, you know? Yeah, I know about institutions. It's horrific in there. I don't share that often. It is ugly. It's not fun. Take it from me. Don't go there. Take it from the man in the grave who can't speak to you. Don't go there. Take it from the person who's paralyzed because he wanted to drink and drive one more time. Don't go there. See, today we have a wonderful opportunity. That's what's great about today. We have a wonderful opportunity in sobriety to live a life filled with keys to the kingdom. You know? But you have to know it's not about you. Page 20, on the top of page 20 in the big book, it's my favorite line of the whole book. You know? Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends on the constant thought of others and how we may meet their needs. You know? And when I'm being of service with sponsees, maybe at a meeting, and definitely at H&I, you know, I receive one more key each time. You know, that unlocks doors that I never even knew were there. I don't know how many of you got to hear Bob last night, Bob Randall. For me, he was the most amazing speaker I've ever heard. I've heard a lot of people speak in AA. He's a professional, no doubt. No doubt. But he brings it, man. He carries it. It's all about action with him. I identified, you know. I work full-time. I go to school, college. I'm involved in my church, in the men's group. I have 4 sponsees. I go on H&I panels. I'm on the steering committee. It's not enough. He said that. It's not enough. I identified. I remember one time, Mike, I was in a bad place. I was in a bad relationship. See, when I got out, there were a lot of things I didn't know. You know, from 12 to 18, I drank and used. So I was kind of like in my prison there. And then from 18 to 42, I was in a prison. So I didn't have much life experience, you know. Gustav, good to see you, bro. Just saw you. Today, I experienced things that, for the first time. And I was in a relationship. This happened to be a bad one. And my friend told me, well, you know, we all have the psychotic one, and you got yours, and you don't have to do it anymore. I said, good. I don't want to ever do that again. But the reason I'm sharing that is because what my sponsor did
He stood by my side the entire time through the madness. And there was a lot of it. You know, and I knew this man really cared about me. Because when I asked him to help me, it wasn't very convenient for him. Never is. It never is, you know. And when my sponsees call, sometimes I'm just so tired, I don't even want to pick up the phone. But I do. Or I call back. Or I meet with them. You know, and when I do that, I realize after meeting with them or talking to them that, again, how blessed I am, you know. One of the things I learned early on in sobriety was when it came to higher power, and it's one thing I love about AA, is that we all get to choose our own higher power, you know. You can have a different God than I. You can have a different God than I. As long as we know that we're not God. See, I used to think I was God. I used to think I knew everything. I used to think I could control everything. I didn't know shit. I couldn't control shit. And when I got incarcerated, I was completely out of control. I had absolutely control. You're told basically when you eat, when you shower, when to sleep, when to go to yard, when to play, for the most part. But then I found sobriety inside the walls. And God gave control back into my life, you know, slowly. Slowly, you know. We had in Tehachapi, we had a few conferences where people would come up, and we had hundreds of people coming from the outside, hundreds, to celebrate sobriety together, you know. But we also had rules in there, you know. Can't hug the outside guest. Can't hug the outside guest. And we broke those rules. We hugged, you know. And what was amazing is that they were just as amazed by us and our message as we were by them and theirs. See, we were all a bunch of drunks identifying with each other. We didn't see women, men, free people, incarcerated. We saw alcoholics. And when you're in prison doing life, it's hard not to keep it real. Because there really isn't much left. You know? It's a big, big dose of reality, and that's what I needed, man. And so I share all that to share this. Yeah, I wish that never happened. I wish the wreckage that I caused never took place. I certainly wish nobody died. But given that it did, my life sentence was probably one of the biggest blessings in my life. And to be able to say that and believe that shows you how far sobriety can take you and how far AA can take you and how far your higher power can take you. You know? And I got out and on, it was within 3 or 4 days that I got to see Kathy. I was showing a picture. We used to take pictures inside. You know, we got to take pictures, and I love those pictures. And I said, hey, do you know so-and-so? Remember that? And you're like, oh, my God. That's Kathy. And I got to see Kathy, and she couldn't believe it. She said one of her boys made it home. And I like to think that everybody in this room has made it home. You might not identify with the physical prison, but I know we all identify with the mental prison and the prison of the heart and the soul. You know, this weekend,
is all about the keys to the kingdom. You know? We receive a lot of keys if we get involved in our own sobriety. I'll share one story. I just got the 5-minute mark. And then I will leave you guys alone. And that's the traffic story. And I share it for a very important reason. Because when I don't share it, a lot of people that know it get mad at me for not sharing it. So I promised a friend of mine in the program that I would always share it if I had the opportunity. The traffic story. 2009, I got out. And I had a job waiting for me. And I've been working for this man for 3 years now, and it's been great. And he gave me a month and a half of freedom before I began to work, to get my life in order, to get clothes, to kind of get situated and get adapted to life and everything. And when I started working with him, I didn't have my driver's license, of course, and that came a little while later. And we were driving, and I used to work in commerce, and we had to take 4 freeways, basically, to get to work. And we all know about the traffic in L.A. It's not very good. And on one morning, there were a number of mornings, but on this particular morning, it was very crowded and just bumper to bumper, and you could see people just switching one lane just to move up 3 feet, and then back to move up 2 feet, and then it's crazy. And I'm doing this. With a huge smile on my face. Again, the first 3 months, I was just like a little kid in a candy store. That's what they did. Not all of them. Some of them waved back. Some of them were like, my boss was one of them. He's like, what are you doing, man? And I said, I'm waving. He goes, why? I said, because I can. You know? He's like, man, I'm waving some more. I said, actually, Jerry, here's the truth. See, for years, I was sitting on my prison bed, and I prayed to God all the time to give me a second chance to be stuck in traffic. Today I am blessed with that opportunity. See, when God gave me sobriety, he gave me a different perspective, a whole new perspective on life. It's not about Matthew anymore. You know? It's not about Matthew. I love all of you, and it's good to be able to say that. It's good to be able to look at all of you and say, I love you, even if I don't even know you. We will get to know each other. You know, grab my hand and let's walk this path. Because there are amazing gifts that you don't even know are out there. And maybe you do. And if you do, share them. You know? I love you guys. Thanks.